Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, amigos. You know what's really easy to do and even easier to forget? Please help me out and hit that like button if you're listening on YouTube. And if you're listening somewhere else, what the hell? Pop in, give me a thumb. Say hello while you're at it. It helps me a ton with the algorithm. And besides, it's real nice to see you there. And now, on to the show. Welcome back, friend. September 22nd, huh? Well, it's National Encouragement Day here at Casa de Blood, so let me be the first to tell you. You can do this, friend. You got this. Oh, don't listen to Chester. Why you gotta be like that, boy? Snuff out people's lights to make your own shine brighter. What a jerk. Forget him, friend. Come on in. We got this. All right, so hey, check out SimplyScaryPodcast.com, would you? For as little as $7.99 a month, you can become a patron and enjoy our entire catalog dating back to 2012. No ads or anything. Plus, you get to support the network.
It's the gift that keeps on giving, Clark.
So tonight we welcome author A.W. Mason by way of Velox Books. This one's a sci-fi story from his book, A Haunt of Travels. And in it, an aerospace company picks up a distress call from an astronaut who shouldn't exist. So without further delay, from author A.W. Mason, I give you The Spaceman. One. When Pierce awoke someplace far away, Sandy was filling up the other half of his sugar-packed styrofoam cup with lukewarm coffee. The break room's dull fluorescent lights buzzed overhead as he stirred the liquid, an almost cement-like consistency. There were plenty of other places Sandy would rather be than 14 Rocket Ship Lane drinking old coffee. He had a tackle box at home that hadn't moved in close to 3 weeks. Instead, he had spent the better part of a month cooped up in this small Aerodyne Space Technologies office, poring over personnel files trying to determine where to trim the fat. Last week, he had to let go of Tony Jolson, probably the best engineer he had ever worked with. Another victim of the bottom line and having the top spot on the salary totem pole. Aerodyne had been losing money in buckets for a while now. The space race was an unpredictable thing. If it hadn't been for the top brass, particularly Carl Orenthal, owning more successful ventures, Sandy surmised Aerodyne would have gotten the axe long ago. Instead, Orenthal's pet project slowly bled out, no matter how hard Sandy tried to stem the flow. Down the hall, the quiet chatter of what remained of his team drifted in through his open door. He sighed as he looked down at the smattering of folders on his desk. He closed his eyes and began rubbing his temples, another afternoon headache fast approaching.
"I don't envy you,"
came a voice, belonging to a tall, thin man from an open doorway. Sandy looked up and saw the communication officer, Sterling Riles, picking at something in his nails.
"Where am I in the pile?"
he asked, half smiling as he took a seat in front of Sandy's desk. "Honestly, all these names and faces are blurring together. I'm sure it won't be long until I turn my personnel file in," Sandy said.
"Well, I mean, it's not a terrible idea," No offense, but you've looked better, Sandman. This must be killing you. I thought about turning in my resignation not too long ago. I suppose I'll stick around, though. I could use that severance,
Sterling said. Me too. Sandy pushed back from his desk and let his eyes wander along the rows of degrees lining the east wall of his office. Pieces of paper, he thought. Damned pieces of paper.
You know what you could really use? A big, greasy, heart attack-inducing cheeseburger and a beer. Why don't we go down to Jimmy's after quitting time? Hell, maybe Sheila will wait on our table again. Remember her?
Sterling smirked, leaning back on the legs of his chair. What I could really use, Sandy began, is a time machine. That way I could... A quick progression of loud footsteps bounced off the barren walls of the hallway. They grew faster and more errant, like dozens of racquetballs pining for escape as the owner of the footsteps drew nearer. It was Douglas Hinterland, his normally perfect hair disheveled, covering one eye. He hugged the doorframe to Sandy's office, trying to regain his breath.
There's been a transmission,
he said, still laboring. 2. The incessant beeping of the ship's path indicator bored into Pierce's head like a dull drill. He had been awake for a full 5 minutes before finding the reset button on the computer's navigation panel, afraid to push it but wanting sweet relief for his already cloudy mind. He knew he was somewhere in space. He could see the glowing round ball called Earth from the ship's sole window, but couldn't remember why he was there. The controls around the cockpit seemed familiar to him, like he had used them before. And, finger hovering above the reset button, he pressed down to cease the mind-numbing blare. Silence. Weightlessness. Peace. He looked down at the name badge on his uniform. Pierce. He was Hank Pierce. The insignia stitched into his arm read Aerodyne Space Technologies. He traced raised letters with his finger, his memory teetering back as if rebooting from the slumber he had been shaken from moments earlier. Masses of stars shone brilliantly, flickering and swelling along the curve of the Earth. The air around him smelled stale, almost sour, or at least he felt like it might smell that way. He couldn't recall the malodorous sensation exactly. It was as if there were no basis for which he could catalog this familiar yet foreign institution.
Hello,
Pierce called out. The sound of his voice, just how long had it been since he heard his own voice, any voice for that matter, startled him, propelling him backward into a slow, buoyant retreat. His memory could neither confirm nor deny the presence of another person co-piloting his journey, but the lack of response to his greeting seemed to confirm the fact he was alone. In front of him, a blank monitor reflected his face, a black mirror. The face was one he knew and was familiar with, silly to think otherwise. He saw his hand in the reflection as he brought it to his cheek and rubbed, smooth. No stubble. All right, he thought. I couldn't have been unconscious for long at all. Maybe I haven't even been up here for all that long. As he pushed his way back toward the operator controls, he spotted a thick black binder with the triangular Aerodyne insignia on the front. He flipped open to the first page and the insignia appeared again. This time, underneath it, he read the words AeroPig Project. He picked up the binder to draw it closer to his face, and as he did, a circular piece of shiny metal flipped its way up toward him. It glinted in the light, showing an eagle on one side and then the profile of President John F. Kennedy on the reverse. Pierce snatched it from the zero gravity, running his finger over the raised date.
1970,
he said. Then closed the half dollar into his palm and began to remember. 3. Are you ready, son? Are you ready to change the world? The man in the suit asked Pierce. A desk sat between them. Pierce watched as the man flipped a half dollar between the knuckles of his right hand. It gleamed in the office light with each pass.
I'm ready to do whatever is asked of me, sir. No matter the danger, no matter the peril, Pierce responded, still eyeing the half dollar.
I'm glad to hear that, the man responded. The lunar valley we're sending you to has never been explored, but our research backs up its usefulness. That's what we're hoping for anyway, but our research team hasn't been wrong yet.
The man let the half dollar come to a rest on his thumb and flipped the coin to Pierce. He caught it against his chest and opened his hand, staring down at President Kennedy. He traced the raised 1970 date stamp with his index finger.
Thank you, Pierce said, looking down at the coin. Still kind of hard to believe it's been 7 years since he was assassinated.
The man in the suit smiled.
Indeed, but life goes on, so they say. Take that with you. It's a symbol of good luck and a token of my appreciation. I give them to each space crew member who runs a mission for me. You'll be in a select company of things who can boast that your money has been to outer space.
Pierce looked confused.
Things, sir?
The man in the suit smiled again.
Sorry, it's people. A small company of people. Please accept my apologies. It's been a long morning. And now, if you'll please stop by Dr. Minshew's office before your final expedition instruction, he'll make sure you're still in tip-top shape for blastoff tomorrow.
The man in the suit stood up, to which Pierce did the same, and stuck out his right hand. The men shook, and Pierce started toward the exit to see Dr. Minshew. He paused in the doorway and looked back.
Sir?
Please, you can call me Mr. Orenthal. What is it, Pierce?
Well, how is what I'm doing going to change the world? I mean, men have already been on the moon before.
Orenthal ran a hand through his slicked back hair and stood up.
Don't worry about that part. Just know that what you're doing, where you're going, is set to make some waves in the space community that won't be able to be ignored.
Pierce flipped the coin as Orenthal had flipped it to him the day before his blastoff and watched it rotate end over end in the zero gravity. The half dollar flipped on a switch in his head. He remembered the blastoff. He remembered the booster malfunction that had sent him off course before even getting close to the moon. Then he remembered waking up that short time ago, never actually making it to his destination. The black aerodyne binder tried to float away from its tether as Pierce flipped through the pages. He stopped a quarter of the way through when he saw a chapter labeled Call Signs. Next to the reset button, the rest of the panel lights had gone back to their normal blinking and beeping. The reset had worked. Pierce grabbed the communicator, eyeing the call signs, and pressed the button labeled Speak.
Mayday, mayday. This is Captain Hank Pierce of Aerodyne Space Technologies, call sign 9 Romeo Delta 33 Foxtrot 4. Does anyone read me? Over.
What's up, baby? It's Bretsky, and I'm here to tell you that SpinQuest.com is giving out free sweeps coins. All you gotta do is purchase a $10 coin pack, and guess what? They're gonna give you the coins from a $30 coin pack. That lets you play all your favorite games like Blackjack, Wanted, Dead or Wild, and we're talking real cash prizes, baby. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
4.
You sure? It was a transmission for us. For Aerodyne?
Sandy asked, as Sterling and Douglas, half running, half walking, followed behind him to the control room. With all the recent budget cuts, Aerodyne shouldn't have had any programs in flight. Right now, most of what they did consisted of research and development for the next unplanned mission.
Yes, sir. He identified himself as Captain Hank Pierce.
I have no logs with him or the call letters he dispatched to us, Douglas replied. The control room expanded the length of the building itself, close to 50 yards. Every 10 yards, a control desk big enough to house a team of six dotted the room. Behind each desk, a large projector-like screen sat mounted behind a whitewashed cement wall. Four of the desks sat unengaged and had been that way for some time now. To Sandy, they were like big, clean grave markers for a bygone era of the bustling space trade. The room had an antiseptic feel to it. It was well organized and well kept, no dust to be disturbed by human contact or otherwise. The cloying aroma of a wild berry air freshener permeated the walls. Four men occupied the middle desk, talking at a hurried pace. They flipped through large black binders, adjusting knobs on the bank of lights that controlled the screen on the wall. On it, the radar showed a small unnamed blip within Earth's orbit. The other Aerodyne team members confirmed Douglas's story as they continued looking through their binders.
Get them back on, Sandy said. I want to talk to them.
Even with the control room at a cool 73 degrees, sweat started to gather on his forehead. He would get to the bottom of this, but didn't need another distraction. Another sour piece of meat added to his plate. He closed his eyes and thought of his tackle box.
Sir, I have him on right now,
one of the men called. A rush of static blared out from the desk intercom. Sandy pressed the speak button and said,
Captain Pierce, this is Sandy Winthrop, head of Aerodyne's Research and Development. My team has updated me on your situation. I have to say, this is a bit intriguing since I don't have you in my flight logs and your call letters aren't any sequence we've ever used. Is there any more you might be able to recall? Anything that might help us out? Who authorized your launch? Over.
The room remained silent as Sandy removed his finger from the smooth speak button, waiting for a response. A crackle emitted from the intercom speaker, and through a weak connection, Pierce began to speak.
Mr. Winthrop, it's so good to hear your voice. I truly wish I could provide more information, sir, but things are still a bit foggy. I have this binder here in front of me that I've been using for all my call letters and mission info.
A loud pop squelched from the speaker, then Pierce continued.
The last thing I remember before waking up was my ship malfunctioning, throwing me off my intended course. And then before that, sitting with Mr. Orenthal talking about my mission. I'm sorry, I wish I could tell you more. Over.
The static dissipated. The men in the room looked toward Sandy, who had his head in his hands. He rubbed at his temples. He could feel the hot white spikes of a migraine starting to dig into the sides of his head.
Could it be a prank? Sterling asked.
No. In order to get through on our communication channels, you have to have the same setup we have here. The equipment and the technology are proprietary, base to ship and vice versa. Same reason we can see him on the radar.
Well, he knows Orenthal. That's something, Douglas said.
Yes, it is, Sandy said, and moved back over to the communication console.
He pressed the speak button again and said,
Hang in there, Pierce. Regardless of the circumstances you left with or now find yourself in, we're going to get you home. Give us a little time. Over.
Time is in great abundance for me right now. Stay in touch. Over.
Sandy rose from the desk and marched toward the exit that led into the hallway. His heels clicked against the polished linoleum, keeping time like an off-kilter metronome.
Where are you going?
Sterling asked.
I have to make a phone call.
5. Sandy stared down at the phone, knowing he had to call Orenthal before he started procedures to bring Pierce back. Aerodyne did grant him a small leash of autonomy when it came to firing and hiring the help, but on matters such as clandestine space missions, he thought it'd behoove him to talk to the director beforehand. He dialed the number and waited for Orenthal's voice.
Hello?
Mr. Orenthal? This is Sandy Winthrop, Eridan Research.
I'm well aware of who you are, Mr. Winthrop. What is it that I can do for you?
Well, sir, strangest thing. I'm not sure how... I'll just cut to it. Sir, we've got a transmission from a ship in our orbit. It's one of ours.
So?
He says his name is Captain Hank Pierce. He said his call sign was Non-Romeo Delta 33 Foxtrot 4. I've looked. My whole team has looked. And we have not used that combination. Nothing even close. He says he doesn't remember much other than a booster malfunction and then waking up. Probably passed out. We've got a live line with him, but who the heck is he? There was silence at Sandy's end of the phone. He knew Orenthal was still present. His breathing began to fill the quietness. Sir? Mr. Orenthal? Are you still there? A sigh, and then Orenthal spoke.
Listen to me carefully, Mr. Winthrop. There are certain things, certain situations you need not know about. Hence the confusion you and your team are having with this man, Pierce. You can rest assured that this is being taken care of.
Well, what am I supposed to tell him? He needs instructions on how to reset his flight path home. His flight instruction binder isn't anything like ours, so...
Mr. Winthrop, I have said all I'm going to say on this matter. Do not reestablish contact with Mr. Pierce. Do not attempt to bring him home. Do not even tell your team about this conversation. I don't care what you tell them, but leave this where it is. Do you understand? Pierce is to remain where he is, permanently.
But Mr. Orenthal, this is a human life we're talking about. I have no doubt my team can bring him back safely. We can't just leave him floating around in space. At least tell me how you're planning to...
For the last time, there is no saving Pierce. Leave well enough alone on this one, Winthrop. Leave well enough alone if you know what is good for you. That is the last word on the matter. Good day.
Sandy did not expect the call to proceed in such a fashion. Instead of answers, he was left with many more questions. Questions that were to remain unanswered, unearthed, and buried deep enough that the caskets couldn't even touch them. Part of Sandy was scared by the way Orenthal reacted. However, part of Sandy also felt furious. So furious that the scared part of him, the part that told him in a tiny squeaky voice to mind his own business and move along like a good little boy, all but disappeared into the rising steam of ire. It was then Sandy made his decision. 6. Back in the control room, Sterling, Douglas, and the others sat around the lone working control desk. They had all stopped flipping through the black flap binders and instead stood or paced quietly as Sandy re-entered. They looked up like a waiting room full of family about to hear the doctor's prognosis. Sandy cleared his throat. What I'm about to tell you may not make sense. In fact, it probably won't, especially if you were expecting a black and white morally adjusted answer. Sandy briefed his team on the phone conversation he had with Orenthal. When he finished, he ran a hand through his damp hair, expecting a barrage of questions about a covert mission and what it meant for the future of Eridan. He expected to see disbelief dancing in his men's eyes. Instead, Douglas came forward, swallowed hard, and said,
I'd like to think I speak for everyone here when I say Orenthal can take his desperate disposition and run it up the flagpole. I know I won't be able to sleep tonight, and maybe not any night for that matter, if I were to walk away from this and leave a man to rot in space.
The whir of industrial air conditioners filled the would-be silence between Douglas's speech and the mounting agreement from the rest of the group. Each man looked Sandy in the eyes and swore his pledge of assistance. I just want to make sure, Sandy said, that you are aware of the ramifications here. You may be fired. You probably will be fired. There's nothing I can do to help you, and there's also nothing I can do to stop you. If you want no part in this, please leave now.
I will understand. Each man remained in place, without so much as a gaze toward the exit. Sandy had never been in war, and was quite thankful for it, yet found it difficult to not parallel his current situation with leading troops into an unwinnable battle. He had confidence in himself and his team to get Pierce back and back safely. In this respect, the mission could be touted as a success. To him, the real challenge would be to see these good, decent men, most of whom he had hired and trained himself, left with nothing after directly disobeying an order from someone farther up the command chain than himself. Sandy sighed, half in relief and half with a disconcerting view of the near future. He looked up at the men in front of him and said, "All right, this is what we're going to do." 7. Pierce located the original flight path records with the help of his new acquaintances from the control room on Earth. It took over 2 hours, but between transmissions with the Aerodyne crew and his stumbling around the small cabin, Pierce was at last ready to fire the thruster blast that would set him on his way back home. Outside the small cabin window, Pierce watched the multitude of stars that surrounded him. Space, although home to not only stars and meteors and planets, was no place for a man to try to live. A place to explore, to learn, yes, but to be able to stare out and see so much and yet recognize so little gave Pierce a feeling more void than the vacuum of space itself.
"Men, I cannot thank you enough for your help today. Just hearing your voice made me remember what it was like to be human again. To need that interaction, that validation," Pierce said, then let off the transmitter button.
"Thank us when you get home,"
Sandy replied.
"You still got a bit of a road in front of you, and I'd like to see that ship when you get back. Perhaps you can give us all a tour and show us how it works. I'm glad we could just about figure it all out together. Our flight books here were pretty useless."
Among the things scattered about the control panel was the flight instructions folder Pierce found before making contact. In each margin, his hand-penciled notes reminded him of a college textbook. The instructions he received from Sandy was valuable as he started to recall some, but not all the things he needed to get his ship back to where it needed to go. But even after reading and going over the binder, then relaying it down to the Aerodyne crew, it was almost as if he were speaking an alien language.
"Well, don't sell yourself short. Perhaps you have a career in aerospace translation in the future." "We figured it out together, and that's what's important right now," Pierce said. He drew a deep breath and let it out in little puffs, something he seemed to recall being taught as a child to help with anxiety. Was it from his mother? Father? He couldn't recall, and the memory floated away from his consciousness almost as soon as it had arrived.
"What's important right now is that you initiate the thruster sequence so we can get this show on the road. We're ready down here when you are,"
Sterling said.
"I suppose you're right. My little vacation is over," Pierce said, hand hovering over the thrust launch.
The little red toggle stared back up at him. He flipped it and felt a mild push as his ship returned to life. He looked out his cabin window again. Slowly, the bright lights dotting the expanse of darkness began to move past him.
"All set, boys. I can't wait to thank each of you in person."
"Let's make that happen, Pierce. And whether you like it or not, lunch will be on me when we get back. How do you all feel about burgers?"
What's up, baby? It's Bretzky, and I'm here to tell you that SpinQuest.com is giving out free sweeps coins. All you gotta do is purchase a $10 coin pack, and guess what? They're gonna give you the coins from a $30 coin pack. That lets you play all your favorite games like Blackjack, Wanted, Dead or Wild, and we're talking real cash prizes, baby. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
8.
For the next 3 days, Sandy and his men attempted to conduct business as usual. On their minds, the life of a man they had never met, but on some level felt like one of their own, weighed heavily as they tried to guide him safely back to Earth. As far as they knew, Orenthal was not privy to their secret mission, at least not yet. Sandy had a sneaking suspicion once the spaceman returned home, not even a black hole would cover their activities. Around lunchtime on the third day, the command center began braying a steady beeping buzzer, alerting Sterling of an incoming craft, one starting to maneuver into the Earth's atmosphere. The relentless noise was music to his ears. He smiled and whistled through his teeth, pounding his fist on the control desk.
"Sandy!" he yelled. "Somebody go grab Sandy! Pierce's ship has made it through! We're about to be in the home stretch!"
On the radar screen, a small blip blinked in an arcing line toward the programmed path set forth between Pierce and the Aerodyne crew. Even with the factored variations, wind, speed, weather events, etc., the re-entry route stayed on course with Pierce and his ship expected to splash down in the Atlantic off Florida's space coast. From his office, Sandy heard the commotion, closed his eyes, and recited a silent prayer. Douglas ran to him from the control room, skidding to a stop before running into Sandy's desk and looking into his boss's eyes. The two shared a grin. Sandy's next move would most likely be the one that alerted Orenthal to Pierce's return. He sighed, picked up the phone, and dialed the number to Aerodyne's search and rescue team. The conversation wasn't a long one, but by the end of it, Sandy seemed taxed. Color returned to his face in waves. He could smell the sour odor of his sweat that wet the hair around his temples. His stomach growled with an audible roar, partly from hunger, but mostly from the anxiety he was preparing to deal with in the coming hours.
"So?"
Douglas said, his voice dry and raspy.
"What did search and rescue say? Are they convinced?"
"Convinced? They know that a rescue event was not on the schedule for today or any day this week. Told me that they haven't had one in some months now. All Orenthal has them doing are drills." Sandy paused and took a swallow of tepid water that had been sitting on his desk since the night before. "They also told me that the big boss man had whittled down their little club too. A team of 5 now."
"5? That's hardly enough to man a crew."
"I know. They said the same thing. I think they can see the writing on the wall just like we can." Douglas considered the information and said,
"So they know that there is no official search job. Nothing approved by Orenthal. And even if so, the manpower would be an issue. What are we going to do, Sandy? We've gotten Pierce this far. Should we call the Coast Guard?"
"Douglas," Sandy said, "you've always been one of my best problem solvers. The Coast Guard would be a fine idea, if we needed them."
"But I don't understand."
"Search and rescue is of the same no man left behind mindset that we're in. They launched the seaboat right after I hung up the phone." Douglas's mouth fell open, but soon started to turn upwards into a childlike smirk.
"Well," he said, "let's go tell the others."
9. The Aerodyne search and rescue seaboat reached a splashdown zone while the sun was still high in the air. Pierce's ship stood out like a silver glacier in the azure ocean. Sandy received a static-filled message from the rescue team's captain, Henry Larkin, that Pierce's extraction was a success, making quick work of getting him onto the seaboat and headed toward the small Aerodyne recovery wing attached to search and rescue. However, Larkin voiced serious concerns about his new charge.
"How long was he up there? Over?"
blared Larkin's voice from a speaker on the crowded control desk. Sandy pressed the talk button and answered,
"An unidentifiable amount of time. Pierce at some point believes he lost consciousness. What's the matter?
Can we talk to him? Over.
Negative at this time, control base. Pierce is in and out of it. He's exhibiting signs of a seizure, or something akin to it. I haven't seen anything like it. His body contorts and releases back to where it was. It's almost too mechanical to be spasms. His speech seems clear. He isn't slurring, but the same thing is muttered over and over. And I'm not sure if it's any language I recognize. Over.
Do you think it might be just dehydration? Exhaustion? Is he going to be able to recover? I need to know if he's going to be okay. Over.
It's too soon to tell. I'll need to run some tests when we get him back to the med wing. I just have minor first aid items here on the boat. Budget cuts, you know. We should be back to base soon. Will you meet us there? Over.
You can bet on that. See you soon, Captain. Thanks again. Over.
Don't thank me yet, Sandy. Let's get our friend here stable, and then maybe you can buy me a coffee and tell me everything you know about this. Over.
That's a deal. Over and out.
Sandy stood up and pushed his chair under his desk. The group of men huddled around him stared blank-faced up at their leader. The room remained silent for several minutes. Sandy sighed and looked up.
Lock it all down, men. We're taking a trip over to search and rescue.
10. By the time the Aerodyne engineering team made it to the medical wing, Larkin and his men had already rushed Pierce inside, got him onto a bed, and started wheeling out equipment. Or at least that's how it appeared to Sandy. An IV cart stood several feet away from Pierce's bed, idly dripping solution onto the white linoleum. More pieces of medical equipment, none that Sandy could recognize, surrounded the bed, immobile and not plugged in. Pierce himself lay under a thin gray sheet, naked from any electrodes, needles, or oxygen tubes. His head twitched to the right every 3 seconds like clockwork.
What's wrong with... Why aren't you guys...
Sandy started as he marched toward Pierce and the rescue team. A young crew member was the only one to raise his head and look at Sandy. The crew member's face went flush as his eyes darted toward another man in the corner.
Oh, good. You're here now,
Orenthal said as he saw Sandy crest the adjacent wall.
I wanted you to see this.
Orenthal held up a scalpel. It glinted under the harsh fluorescence. His smile was wild and exposed two huge rows of synthetically white teeth. He turned toward Pierce, raised the scalpel, and plunged it hilt deep into Pierce's neck.
No!
Sandy screamed, lunging at Orenthal, who sidestepped the attempt. Sandy went sprawling to the floor, knocking over a caddy full of metal instruments, which conducted a symphony of clinks and clanks as they cascaded to the ground. Orenthal plunged a scalpel into Pierce's neck once more, this time hacksawing back and forth, digging deeper and wider into the prone man. Pierce's head began to tick quicker, snapping to and fro at unsightly angles. From the wound, a thick mucus-like fluid sprayed Sandy in his face as he sat up to see the carnage unfolding before him. The men from both crews retreated, watching in stunned silence as the madman continued his work. Sandy made it back to his feet, regaining his balance and wiped the gore from his eyes. It felt cold and oily and smelled a bit like burnt fuel. He rubbed the substance between his thumb and pointer finger. Greasy coconut oil-like liquid coated his hand. Dumbfounded, Sandy wiped more of it from his face, pawing at his cheeks, expecting to see his hands dripping with sticky red blood. Instead, more of the thick white oil clung to his skin. When Sandy saw the spark coming from Pierce's bed, he transitioned back to the reality before him. Spittle formed at the corner of Orenthal's mouth as he made a final pass with the scalpel, separating Pierce's head from his body. Orenthal's breathing was labored, but the lunatic smile he wore illustrated the satisfaction he had once the deed was done. He turned towards Sandy and the rest of the group, holding Pierce's head by the hair and extended it forward. Thick globs of the white goo dripped and splattered onto the tile. Stripped wires and metallic tubes jutted out from the portion of Pierce's neck where the human flesh and bone should have been, while the sparks emitting from the wound started to die down. Orenthal released the mass of tangled hair from his grip, and Pierce's head hit the floor with a sickening metallic thud.
"You didn't think I'd find out, did you?" Orenthal said.
He wiped his hands on the sleeves of his suit jacket.
"I knew," he continued, pointing a finger at Sandy, "that you'd be trouble for me. Did you think that I wouldn't figure out you disobeyed my orders to leave well enough alone when any and every jagoff news station with a camera saw an Eridan ship go splashing into the ocean?"
Right away, Sandy felt a sense of relief that it wasn't the search and rescue team that had betrayed him, and that Orenthal learned of the splashdown via the 24-hour news cycle. He knew one way or the other something would leak. Orenthal would find out, and there would be hell to pay. But he was not expecting the scene that had played out in front of him.
What did you do to Pierce? What did you do to that man?
Asked Douglas in a small, quiet voice.
Man? Ha! That's not a man, you idiot! Men bleed, don't they? Men feel pain. They eat and sleep and die. Do you want me to cut you open next to see what happens to a man? Are you a real man, Hinterland?
Orenthal said as he advanced toward Douglas, scalpel in front of him. From the corners of his eyes, Sandy began to see red. The pieces started to take shape, connecting in a way that created more questions. Sandy bent down and picked up the metal tray that moments before housed the scalpel and other medical tools, wound back, and smacked Orenthal in the face. He heard a sharp crack, Orenthal's nose breaking, and observed two rivers of real blood pour down the boss's thin lips. The scalpel fell and clattered on the floor, and Orenthal followed suit. Sandy stood over the cowering man, grabbed him under his collared shirt, and pulled him close to his face.
"What the fuck is going on, Orenthal?"
Sandy demanded. Orenthal glared up at the man holding him. His harsh breathing caused fine mists of blood to spatter Sandy's face.
"I'm not telling you any..."
Orenthal started. Sandy reared back again, with his fist this time, and Orenthal shrank back, closing his eyes.
Fine, I'll tell you. No one will believe you anyway.
Sandy released Orenthal's collar and pushed him back to the tile.
Speak then,
he said, straightening back up, rejoining his crew.
That thing...
Orenthal said, gesturing with his hand toward the body on the hospital bed.
That thing is not a man. Not a man named Hank Pierce. That thing was created, built in the Eridan labs back in the late 1960s by my father, while most of you were still trying to figure out how to wipe your own asses. It's an android. A robot, if you want to call it that. But no, it's not a man. We created a small team of them, and it about put us in financial ruin. My father, who was Eridan's president at the time, was trying to win a government bid to pay for his experiment and to send these things to space. They were expensive to build, but would outlast any human. They didn't have to rest. Didn't require sustenance. They were programmed with a consciousness, something to make them seem more human to please the board directing the government grants. But they weren't sentient. They were never supposed to be sentient.
Orenthal wiped blood away from his mouth using the back of his hand and continued.
At that point, we were overlooked for any sort of government assistance. Our idea was too expensive, even when we presented them with the cost analysis compared to human program space exploration. NASA won the bid, and the rest, as they say, was history. But my father couldn't let it go. Sunk even more money into creating his little pets. Pierce was the last one to be sent into orbit, designed personally by my father. It was then my father had his heart attack, thank God, and had to step down from operations. I did everything I could to take our company out of its nosedive, including the end of this android program. I swept it under the rug with quite a few other indiscretions, not for my father's sake as much as for my own legacy. Don't you understand? I won't let any nitwits, including the likes of you, tarnish my reputation.
Orenthal spat onto the towel, a pinkish gob of saliva and blood dribbling down his chin. He stood, grimacing as he staggered to his feet.
So you mean to tell me your hubris, your goddamn sense of self-importance could have put the lives of our search and rescue crew in danger, rushing out to save a robot? That we stressed and spent the last several nights sleepless, worrying about a man just trying to get back home. Put ourselves through mental and physical torment to protect your stupid legacy?
You should have listened to me. It was for your own good. You lot are in serious trouble. Insubordination, lying, use of company manpower in an unapproved manner. That's just the small list I see right this minute. Oh, I will have your hides for this.
I don't know about you, Sandy, but I don't think I can work for a company that doesn't put humanity before heritage,
Larkin said.
Nope, me neither,
spoke Sterling from the back. A general sense of acquiescence rumbled through the group. Orenthal stared back, surprised at first. His wide eyes narrowed and his brow began to furrow. He muttered something unintelligible under his breath. Sandy thought it sounded like the word fools.
You fellas hungry?
Sandy said, looking at each member of his crew. Their tired eyes stared back as small smiles began to appear on each man's face.
It's been a long day, and I know I could use a burger and a beer.
Orenthal, still mumbling to himself, shot an icy look toward Sandy.
What about you, Larkin? You and your crew hungry?
That depends. You buying?
Sandy laughed.
Absolutely. Think of it as our last supper.
Sandy unclipped his personnel badge, looked at the youthful face laminated on the plastic, and chucked it at Orenthal. It hit him in the chest and bounced to the floor. One by one, the engineers and search and rescue crew unclipped their badges as well, dropping them to the floor with a collective clunk. They started toward the door, and Orenthal began to scream behind them.
Idiots! The lot of you! You sure as hell better leave all company property behind. Laptops, cell phones, the company Teslas, they're all mine. Wait until you hear from my attorneys. There will be hell to pay. Oh yes, there will be hell to pay.
As the men shuffled outside, past the parking lot and down the sidewalk, the evening started to pull its purple blanket across the sky.
So where are we headed?
Sandy asked Larkin. Larkin thought for a moment and turned to Sandy.
You think Sheila still works at Jimmy's?
Ground control to Major Tom. And that was The Spaceman by A.W. Mason. A good reminder that, sure, the boss is sometimes an asshole, but maybe he has his reasons. A little about the author. A.W. Mason lives in Florida with his cats Wallace and Belle, retired extreme parkour artists who look so dapper in their little helmets and knee pads. He enjoys all the nachos, getting lost in the woods, and naps. Mason has published several books, including The Haunt of Travels, The Cleanup Crew, The Scampering, co-authored with Alana K. Drex, and Judy Martin's Final Curtain Call. His short stories have appeared in various anthologies.
Again, this one's from his book, A Haunt of Travels, which you can find at VeloxBooks.com and on Audible. Hey, thanks, AW. We, too, enjoy all the nachos.
Shush!
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillinTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I guess this is where we part ways, at least till next week. So grab a drink for the road, friend. May the wind be at your back, and may the road rise up to meet you. And remember, you got this. I'll see you all next time, and as always, go fuck yourselves. Good night, y'all.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.